This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to Pressing Matters, the show where we go behind the headlines and explore issues driving the press. I'm Shazana Mukhtar. The COVID-19 pandemic has seen a buildup of pressure for those working in the media industry, both from a business survival standpoint, but also in terms of the environment for media freedom, which has seen a global decline, according to Reporters Without Borders. Independent journalist Norman Goh joins me today to reflect on the findings of the latest Press Freedom Index, as well as his experience as a freelancer in the media industry during these tumultuous times. Hi, Norman. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start with the Reporters Without Borders World Press Freedom Index released last month. Malaysia was ranked at 119th place and charted the biggest drop in the entire index. It's not really a surprise. I think a fall in the standings was largely expected by the media fraternity, given the experiences of the past year. But that said, what do you make of the fact that we fell 18 places? Is this representative of how far the space for media in Malaysia has shrunk? Or maybe the situation isn't quite as dire as the number indicates?
The ranking at 101 last year was the best we have achieved over the years. Our ranking since 2013, based on the World Press Freedom Index, the worst that we had was in the year 2014 and 2015, it was 147. So we were once at 123, I think that was post general election in 2014. And then after that, we improved again to 101. It was just last year. I mean, overall, we have improved more than 40 places and become the top in Southeast Asia.
When you set out the chronology of our rankings like that, we can see the progression to a more free environment for the media, particularly after G14. So how has the situation changed in just a year?
Before COVID-19 and before they changed the government, there were lesser restrictions. Press are not being selected to cover official functions or being denied entry in Putrajaya. Pre-2018 election, back then when I was working with Malaysia Kini, my colleagues were banned from entering the Home Affairs Ministry. And sometimes when you reveal that you are a journalist with so-and-so online news portal was critical to the government then, you are not allowed to enter. In the last administration, there was much less reports of media getting barred from coverage. And in 2019, the Anti-Fake News Act 2018 was eventually repealed in the parliament. But there are still many archaic laws yet to be repealed. Things could have been done for the past few years. I mean, particularly after the change of government, things could have been done. I mean, Media Council was established in 2019. There was a pro tem committee. But it did not see the light of the day after the change of government in March 2020. It's already the end of the line for governments to tell media what to write and what to publish. I mean, it's the end of the time where government knows best. Let the media regulate on their own. That's why we want to have the Media Council. Over the year, when I talk to friends who are working in print or even major mainstream media, they receive calls from Putrajaya instructing them not to publish critical stories against the government. They do receive calls even during Pakatan Harapan. But when they spoke to me, they said they complained they are getting more calls, especially in the past year during Pakatan National Government. But I would like to point out another thing is that over the past year, there is a growing number of new media companies being set up, as well as politicians acquiring major shares in newsrooms. I mean, one of the recent ones is Dato Sri Johari Abdul Ghani, who is a former finance minister. He became the second largest shareholder in Media Prima. So unfortunately, in this kind of situation, right, we don't have media councils or laws to ensure transparency and credibility of media newsrooms. Now, the problem is that who are these financiers? The question is that, do they influence what we consume in the news every day? And also a question is that, what are the implications of all this to the democratic process in the country?
The government has reaffirmed its commitment to press freedom, as you mentioned as well, in the wake of the recent rankings. And the Minister of Communication, Datuk Saifuddin Abdullah, has assured that the government will give ample room to the news media to report on what's happening in the country. This is in a statement he issued on 17th of April. Now, statements are one thing, but what actions would you like to see the government take to put their money where their mouth is when it comes to freedom of the press?
So I think I would really call upon the government, especially the minister, Datuk Saifuddin, to really walk the talk and move the establishment of the Media Council. Number two, there are so many laws that are listed earlier. I think these are the laws that it is the low hanging fruit where the government can look into and to repeal. If they want to amend, the best is still to repeal some of these restrictive, archaic laws that was not just governing the press freedom, it also governs the freedom of expression and the right to information as well. I mean, Malaysia is also listed as one of the few countries where we don't have the right to freedom of information.
You've mentioned several concrete steps that the government can actually take in order to show that it's committed to press freedom. We raise a hue and cry over press freedom rankings every year, but how much of an impact do you think this actually has on policy? I mean, do you think these rankings matter in the broader scheme of things?
I think it does. I think, in my opinion, it is a very good barometer of how the current climate or media landscape in the country where it affects journalists. And it also provides an overview of how media is working in a particular country, because there are a lot of consulting firms who provide risk reports, even based on global ranking on World Press Freedom Index. It's one of the few things where it's one of the factors that leads to foreign investments as well. So these rankings also give an impression in the aspect of right to access information, the freedom for the press to report without fear or favor. So although many of our neighbors also rank as not free in the press freedom, we can see countries like the top three, like Norway, Finland, and Sweden, they rank the top. So these countries are also using these sort of rankings to champion press freedom as part of the diplomacy tool in their foreign policy interests. So it's in a way, one thing, you create a better trust for foreign investors, for those who are coming here, for diplomats as well, and so for the public as a whole.
Right. So it actually makes a difference whether Malaysia goes up or down in the rankings. There are people both within and outside of Malaysia that take this into consideration, including when making investment decisions. So it is important to strive for improvement. I'm speaking to Norman Goh, independent journalist, on Pressing Matters. We're taking a short break, and when we come back, we'll be switching gears and discussing journalism from a freelance perspective. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Hello, this is Pressing Matters on The Morning Run. I'm Shazana, and with me today is independent journalist Norman Goh. Earlier, we were discussing the latest Reporters Without Borders Press Freedom Index, but now we're switching gears and tapping into your perspective as a journalist, Norman. So even before the pandemic, newsrooms have been shrinking or shutting down entirely, and more journalists have turned to freelancing as a source of income. So has the pandemic situation made things even more challenging for freelancers?
I think it has been pretty difficult because the cash flow has been really tight for a lot of newsrooms. I mean, a lot of my friends had to take pay cut over the past year. While there are also other newsrooms, they had difficulty in getting the salary, sometimes getting part of the salary being dispersed to them at the end of last year. And then some of them had no pay at all. So things like the opportunity for a lot of freelancers like myself is it has been pretty tough, and also because due to the restrictions of traveling, and also access to information, and it really impedes on our work because we can't really travel across the state unless we get permission from the authorities to cover stories, for example, and with the COVID-19 pandemic, so it poses some risks. Even for a lot of freelance journalists, because when you are a freelancer, you have you're not certain how much you're going to get a month. It's also based on the number of articles that you submit. And also you don't get EPF or SOCSO, unlike permanent or full-time contract workers, or journalists who are working in newsrooms. So these are the few things that you have to consider. But one of the things that I really enjoy, it's the flexibility in the work that I do when I do freelancing. Because at the same time, because I'm studying, but it also provides me an ample room to go after and pitch for stories where I'm passionate about. I think one of the stories that I really wanted to really bring about next, it's one of the low-cost housing in Selangor has experienced a a hike in the number of suicide attempts by single mothers. So this is one of the stories where, you know, sometimes we get too bogged down with a lot of political stories, but there are a lot of social issues, social concerns that we can cover as a freelance journalist. Mm-hmm.
So freelancing gives you that bit of freedom or independence to choose the editorial direction that you want to pursue.
Yeah, and sometimes, you know, we're too bogged down with the day in, day out, he said, she said kind of stories on politics. But we failed to actually take a step back into this fast-paced journalism and looking into how to tell stories better and humanizing the stories that we write. I think that is very crucial because at the end of the day, as journalists, we bring change. And the change in the policies is always for the betterment of the society itself.
Mm-hmm. All right. And speaking of storytelling, you single-handedly came up with your own podcast last year, Bicara Minggu Ini, or Talk of the Week. What made you decide to foray into podcasting? And what has the learning curve been like?
Well, the idea came about after when it was during the MCO last year. My friends in Singapore, they were saying that, you know, I don't get enough in-depth analysis, stories about what's going on in the country. Now, knowing that there are a lot of Malaysians who are abroad who wants to follow the news in the country and they want more in-depth analysis, explainers and all that. So my friend told me, why don't you start a podcast? It's simple, it's easier and it's free. It's easy to start. You just start with myself writing the script. I know scripting is tough. That's where one of the learning curves as well. And also a lot of practicing and repeating. So the aim of Bicara Minggu Ini initially was to cover current affairs and politics in Malaysia and also expanded to issues related to press freedom, social issues, policies, as well as regional affairs. But through podcasting, I think it really gives journalists a new avenue to tell stories, to be more innovative and to be creative in journalism.
How has the podcast been performing? Do you have targets for the podcast? Is it a source of income for you? Or do you see this more as a passion project?
I think in the long run, I would see this as a source of revenue. Again, it is not easy running the show on my own. I think somewhere down the line, once you created that mass volume of people following and all that, because I'm producing both on audio and video, because I find that if you just do audio and you don't do video, you're not going to tap on the other market of audience that who wants to actually watch video or podcasting from there. Mm-hmm. So it's like looking
at Joe Rogan. That's right.
Yes, yes. So he's, you know, there's this monetization on YouTube, but Spotify, there's not much of monetization just yet. But I think it's in the long run, I think it will take time. I mean, a lot of YouTubers take time as well to build their branding on YouTube and how they switch between both. And they use two platforms at the same time in creating this art platform. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Let's pivot a little bit to talk about social media. And I'm wondering how you view it, especially from your vantage point as a freelance journalist. Because on one hand, I mean, you can argue that social media has been a major cause of viral misinformation. And the fact that, you know, you can get this large audience on social media gives the impression that anyone can report on news or make news. But it's also a valuable channel for journalists to share or obtain information. And it's a platform for journalists to disseminate news reports, which I presume would be especially useful for freelancers like yourself. So how do you square these two competing ideas of what social media does to journalism?
I think social media has really opened up and forced journalists to change their ways of reporting. I mean, the traditional way is you call the person that you want to clarify the information, and later on you file the story and the story gets published and that's it. But the advent of social media has really opened up new opportunities for journalists, and it requires more journalists to be, you know, putting the face into the stories that they write. So I believe that as journalists, yes, we are bound by the code of ethics, the objectivity of how we write and report. Yes, we are all humans as well. Our personal opinions and belief system should not hinder or influence the objectivity of our reporting. That's the fine line that we have to remember when it comes to social media. When we share our opinions or we share information or news, breaking news, for example, our personal feelings should not jeopardize the credibility of our work as a journalist on the stories that we write. So there are more and more journalists sharing their views on social media. It has become a new, I would say not so new, but it's really good of crowdsourcing information. So it's to me, it really changes how newsrooms, it really forces how newsrooms should function, moving away from the very traditional way of crowdsourcing information. And this is also an opportunity for journalists to build their own branding, because sometimes when we report news, people just skim through, don't know which particular websites you write for or even brand of news that you read for. But what we are seeing right now as readers or even news consumers are becoming more and more sophisticated. They are following certain journalists. So as journalists, also very important when we use social media is that we have to make it clear to our followers and readers is that there are differences between news report and personal opinion between of the writer. So because, you know, if you bring this up to a lot of the news consumers out there, they can't differentiate between a news report and an opinion piece or even a letter to editor. So it's in a way, they are advantages and disadvantages of it. But I would say that there are more advantages where you can use that space to educate the public on media literacy, on how to consume news, on how to verify or fact check information. So it's, yeah, I think it really helped, but it's also very important for journalists to sometimes you will have to pull your horses. You have to hold your horses in saying the things on social media, because once it's out, it's out. Right. You can't edit it.
Right.
And people will just screen cap.
The perils of using social media indeed. Norman Goh, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Thank you for having me. Have a great day.
I've been speaking to independent journalist Norman Goh. If you want to hear more from him, look up his podcast, Bicara Minggu Ini, on Spotify. This has been Pressing Matters on The Morning Run. We have the 10 a.m. news bulletin coming up next, and then Enterprise takes you through the rest of the morning. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.